literacy education gadfly show. Mike and Rick tell you everything you need to know about education and learning and teaching. Listen to the words that they be preaching, cause it's the education gadfly show. Yeah, it's the
hello, this is your host Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man who scores a whopping 96 on the newly proposed immigrant point system, Dave DeShriver.
Very proud of that score. Hello, Michael. Thanks for having me.
How are you, Dave?
Very well.
I bet you score even better on the Presidential Fitness Award scale.
I did very well on the immigration scale, so it'd be tough to beat that.
You know, I was never good at that Presidential Fitness scale because I'm not very flexible.
That's going to be an issue for that.
Remember that touching your toes thing, that box?
Yeah, you got to lean over and touch how far you can go to the toes.
Yep.
You know who would be good?
Who's that?
Mayor Fenty. He is
really?
Quite an athlete, you know.
Is he flexible?
Very flexible.
Yeah.
I did a triathlon this weekend with him in Cambridge, Maryland.
That is so cool. Well, and did you beat him?
I beat him, but not by much. This is the guy who's out there consistently every day, and he's still doing very well on half Ironmans.
Wow.
I'll tell you, I'm impressed.
That is actually impressive.
It reflects nicely on the shaved head. It's very fit.
Did you see him out there on the trail?
I did.
Yeah.
I gave him the pump fist, said, go on, Adrian.
Yeah. Did you talk?
Well, briefly.
All right. Well, good. Well, we're going to, of course, talk about Adrian
Fenty.
He didn't
drop any big news that day, and he had it.
This was before the big news that we are going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I felt like he undercut me with it.
Okay. Sorry about that. That was a good line.
Betrayed
my
trust.
That was a good line. Well, Dave, so that's exciting. And anybody else famous out on the triathlon circuit that you saw?
Well, since you dropped out, not many famous people. Yeah, I haven't seen Rick Hess. I haven't seen you, Rotherham.
Yeah. It's Liam? A lot of, you know, Dave, I know you come on the show every once in a while, which we appreciate as a guest, but I got to tell you, it's a lot of work putting this podcast together. And I just don't have time to train for triathlon.
I imagine. Well, this is why you're moving into the new office with the recording studio in office.
Yeah.
So you never have to come here long commute.
That's right. Well, let's get going, Dave. We've got a lot to cover. We, of course, are going to start with the game of Pardon the Gadfly. And then we have an interview with the original Education Gadfly, the one and only Checker Finn. And finally, in-house weirdo Liam will impart some education news of the weird. So let's play Pardon the Gadfly. Three topics, 90 seconds each. Christina, start us off.
All right, and we'll start off with the very nimble Adrian Fenty. He just took over the city schools here in D.C., and he just named Michelle Rhee as school's chancellor. Dave, what do we know about Michelle, and does she have any chance of succeeding in her new job?
I think she's been set up by Fenty. She is going to be Fenty's proxy punching bag. A lot of this was a secretive process, and now the council has to agree to have her in, and they're lining her up because she has no experience dealing with bureaucracies and on race issues. It's going to be real tough.
Wow. I think you're just still bitter that Fenty did not tell you the news when you're on that race.
Well, of course I'm bitter about that. Yeah. But these issues are legit.
All right. Well, I know Michelle quite well, and I think very highly of her. She is one of the smartest, savviest people in education reform. And I don't agree that she has no experience with bureaucracies. Her organization, the New Teacher Project, exists to work with bureaucracies. They've had contracts with HR departments of big city school systems. There is nothing more bureaucratic than an HR department.
150 employees she handles versus 12,000 employees, of which are very battle-worn politically.
Sure. No. That's
going to be tough.
This is a much bigger organization. It's a big challenge. And I agree it is going to be a huge challenge. I mean, the D.C. public schools are dysfunctional. The governance is dysfunctional. But she now has a popular mayor who won with an overwhelming amount of votes backing her up.
If he doesn't back her up strongly, he's in trouble.
All right, topic two. Looks like New York City might start experimenting with paying kids who do well on tests. Mike, do kids who score well on high-stakes exams deserve to receive cold, hard cash for their efforts?
Absolutely. Look, I have no problem with experimenting with this. I think it's something worth trying out. We have all kinds of incentives built into our education system. That's what education reform has been about for 20 years. It's trying to get the incentives right, trying to incentivize school performance. Now with merit pay, trying to get teachers to do their part, raise those test scores. I don't see why we shouldn't at least try it out with the students as well. Dave?
I think this is a really bad idea. I mean, what we're doing, we're establishing a precedent, which is going to eventually grow to an entitlement. Why do we have to give money for kids to do well on tests or to take the test? Where is the discipline of education, the maturation, the internal struggle? of learning and then taking the test and working through that by your own incentives.
Are you saying that we're coddling the kids?
I'm saying we are coddling them extremely. This is like when kids go to college, they expect to have coffee shops, they expect to be treated, they expect to have all the amenities to make their life easy. But you should expect that they should come to the test and do well. You don't pay them for this.
Hold on, though, Dave. I don't quite understand the analogy. I mean, in our society, we pay people who do a good job more money, right?
Right.
We're very open to that in most of our society. We give people bonuses. If people go out and sell a lot of stuff, they get a bonus. Maybe they get to go on a trip at the end of the year.
Fair enough. But,
right?
But what's
why not use this with kids?
The distinction is that this is in the education process. This is why they're learning. This is why they're maturing internally.
Dave, let me ask you this.
So they got it.
When you were in kindergarten, did you ever get a gold star?
I earned that gold star.
Well, yes, you did earn it, but you got it. They have to earn it. In order to earn it.
They can still get a gold.
I mean, they have to learn it to earn it.
I do not object to gold stars. I object to money to buy gold stars.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Fair enough. All
That's
right.
That's the one agreement.
Speaking of earning rewards, Dave, lots of districts are embracing earned autonomy, giving schools that do a good job more freedoms in return for more responsibility. Could such an idea work with NCLB? And if so, why aren't we doing it?
Well, I think that's going to be the crux of the reauthorization. Well, the new federal-state relationship where you have to have more autonomy and for innovation. So making sure, and this is, you know, a Florida mantra, to be tight about the ends.
It also sounds like a mantra of some of the states that you represent.
It is. And you, effectively, you just want to make sure that they're innovative and they're producing the results and that the Department of Education is properly overseeing, but not getting too involved in the technical compliance of it.
All right, so let's talk about some details here. Right. Checker and I have a piece out this week that argues that one example could be that if a school makes AYP, Adequate Yearly Progress, they can ignore HQT, the Highly Qualified Teachers provision. In other words, if schools are getting results in terms of achievement, we shouldn't care about what kind of teachers they've hired, their teacher credentials, especially since we know that highly qualified teachers is such a poor proxy for quality. Now, do you think a proposal like that, where, again, schools get to earn greater autonomy, could go anywhere?
Well, I think the principle is right, but you're going to have a lot of pushback from individual interest groups. Consider the Education Trust. Do you think they're going to let money flow out of Title II into Title I while they could capture that money and invest it into a variety of professional development and pre-service and post and professional development along the way?
All right.
I don't think they want to let it go.
Well, that's a separate issue. But I think it's hard to defend why we should be regulating schools that are getting the job done instead of cutting them free to keep doing what works.
I think you're right. But the details are going to be very important and difficult.
Fair enough. Well, thank you. That was a very good game of Pardon the Gadfly. And don't you think Christina has a nice radio voice?
I do. It's very nice.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, coming up next is our interview with the original Education Gadfly, Checker Finn. Let's take a listen. Checker Finn, welcome back to the Education Gadfly Show.
It's always a pleasure. It's been real.
Now, Checker, I have to start by asking you about a quote that you had last week in the Washington Post. It was about the new Center on Education Policy report that showed the test scores are going up. Since No Child Left Behind was enacted. And you said it is neither champagne time nor sackcloth and ashes time. Now, that latter part of that quote, what were you referring to exactly?
I think it's a biblical reference, actually, to sackcloth and ashes. That's what you put on if you are really, really, really ashamed.
Ashamed? Oh, okay. All right. Well, did you just think about that on the spur of the moment?
The Bible is always in my head.
Okay. Let's talk about our favorite locale, Dayton, Ohio.
Yes.
Okay. Where you were raised.
Yes.
As a boy and went to school until you were what?
15.
15?
Yep.
Okay. Dayton Public Schools.
Dayton Public Schools. Good school system.
Okay. Now, recently, a levy went down, was not passed. The school district, as a result, has to find ways to cut some money. You tell the story. What's happening there and how is this affecting some of the good schools in Dayton, Ohio?
It's a problem. All school systems do a bad job of shrinking and do a bad job of budget cutting, and they all resemble the old joke about the Washington Monument strategy here, where in Washington, where it is said that if you tell the National Park Service that it's going to have to cut anything at all off its budget, the immediate response is, well, then we'll have to close the Washington Monument. In other words, we're going to punish you for cutting our budget by taking away your pride and joy, something that you really like. School systems typically respond very badly to budget cuts. They want to shorten school hours, which is a bad idea for kids, or they want to fire the youngest teachers with the most energy because the older ones have seniority and have bumping rights, and they want to cut out art programs and music programs. They never think about important possibilities like organizing and running schools in a completely different way or substituting technology for people. Those kinds of changes. So Dayton is doing the typical budget cutting number, and that has brought particular pain and suffering to a school called DECA, the Dayton Early College Academy, which has been a special high school under the aegis of the Dayton Schools and also the University of Dayton. It's one of these early college high schools with some Gates encouragement along the way. And finally, after about 3 years, they're both doing a terrific job with high school education for poor kids. And they've also finally recruited the kind of teaching staff they want and need in a school like this. And the problem is those are all young, energetic teachers without seniority. And as a part of the Dayton public school system, this means they're going to be all laid off. And they will be replaced by tired old senior teachers who have bumping rights.
So this is the same last hired, first fired.
Exactly. Idea. And it's particularly bad for an innovative school that has basically a handpicked teaching staff.
Okay. So facing that choice, now what's it doing?
The people who run DECA said, what if we were a charter school? We could then hire whomever we liked, and we wouldn't be subject to the bumping rights and the seniority system in the union contract, which is true under the Ohio charter law and most charter laws. And it's one of the major pluses of charter schools is this kind of personnel freedom. Problem is, DECA was not a charter school. It was a so-called contract school within the school system. So how could they become a charter school? Well, it turned out there were two options. One is they could go to an outside charter authorizer, basically incorporate very quickly and go to an outside charter authorizer, such as the Fordham Foundation or any others, or they could try to persuade the school system to be their sponsor, to authorize them as a charter school. Dayton Public Schools don't have any charter schools today. This would be a first. This would, in my view, be a very good thing for the Dayton Public Schools to sponsor a bona fide independent charter school. But to do that is really sort of in your face to the teachers union, because it's basically the school system saying, well, you got us one way, but you're not going to get us the other. We're going to cut this school some slack by turning it into a charter school.
So on the whole, Checker, I mean, what does this teach us? Is this mean that teacher unions are really losing their clout, that even in a layoff situation now, there's a way to get around this last hired, first fired?
It means that imaginative school leadership that actually has an educational objective they feel strongly about can even outfox the teacher unions if they are willing to pay the political and bureaucratic price and take the risks that come with it, such as always the potential of a strike.
All right. And do you think this is going to happen for any other schools in Dayton?
There are one or two other schools in Dayton that we've heard pretty strong rumors, we meaning Fordham in Dayton, that they are also exploring possible charter status. I don't think it's going to happen by July 1 when the new budget takes effect, but it might happen a year later.
All right. You know, there was an article in the New York Times Magazine this week that was focusing on Lawrence Summers, formerly president of Harvard and a scholar, who said that the point of scholarship and putting ideas out there in the public view is that ideas go from being impossible to being inevitable. And I have to say, it seems like this sort of thing would have been impossible 10 years ago. And now it almost seems inevitable that good schools that have to face these kinds of union restrictions are going to find other ways around the system.
It's not quite inevitable, but it's sure no longer impossible.
All right. Checker Finn, thanks for joining us.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
What do you think, Dave? That Checker, he's still on his game, huh?
He's never left his game.
Yes. Okay. Well, it is time for everyone's favorite education news of the weird with our specially weird correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what's weird this week?
The China Daily reports, quote, parents in China are concerned that new rules making dancing classes compulsory at school will lead to extra fees and heighten the risk of puppy love blossoming between their children, unquote. Seems that recent studies showing a rise in child obesity have spurred the country's officials to develop a dance curriculum, which includes 7 dance steps that school children are to perform during their free time between classes. But a woman surnamed Zhao doesn't like the idea. Putting forth other possibilities for promoting physical fitness, Zhao said, quote, Activities like cockfighting and sandbag tossing could be suitable for economically undeveloped regions, unquote. But
cockfighting? Do you get any exercise? I mean,
is that in lieu of dancing?
Chicken gets exercise, but...
I imagine it's, you know, you're jumping up and down.
Oh, okay. In excitement.
The excitement of the event, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But perhaps unsurprisingly, Chinese authorities aren't backing away from their plan. Quote, young love will not blossom through dancing, nor will it die through a lack of dancing, said Yang Giren, a ministry official. He continued, quote, four students will be grouped together to perform the waltz, and they will change partners regularly. As soon as one song finishes, this way... the risk of young love will be lowered. Dave, do you like to dance?
I'm inspired by that, and I'll tell you why. Because Kevin Bacon at Footloose did not back down against the minister's father.
That's
in
right.
In fact, he took the platform to make a statement on that town, and I think China is following that lead. I'm impressed.
That is right. But I don't know, in Footloose, if they had taken the dancing away, maybe puppy love would not have flourished as much as it did.
It would just go underground.
That's right.
You'd be creating a black market for puppy love.
That's right. You're right. You're right.
Yeah, bring it above board. Don't dance in the barns. Dance in the schools.
Wow.
We learned a lot. And I think China is also. Where are they in their economic development? 20 to 30 years behind, which pegs them just about at the year Footloose was released.
Well, and I certainly, you can expect that you could walk the streets of Shanghai and probably find a bootleg copy of Footloose for not a lot of money, right?
In preparation for the Olympics, they need to address this now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good. Well, Liam, thanks. That was weird. And I always appreciate when you go overseas for the news of the weird. Have you found in the last year of reporting that one country is particularly weirder than any others?
Botswana.
Have we ever had anything from Botswana? Yeah.
It's a weird name.
It's a weird name. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. Dave, we appreciate you joining us.
Michael, it's always a pleasure.
It is always a pleasure having you. You know, Rick is off in Greece right now, sailing around, sitting on the beach. But you're here doing the work, putting forward education ideas.
I am always
ideas.
Here when Rick is on a fantastic vacation in a beautiful place.
That's true.
This happens too frequently.
Well, let's get you back some time when Rick's here too, and we'll have some good conversations.
Good times.
But until then,
I'm Dave DeShriver.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.